violence erupts across Ecuador, culminating with armed people taking over a live TV broadcast. More information about U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin's hospitalization is released, and it raises questions for the administration.
Those things are completely shocking.
And the latest tool to help fight the devastation of climate change, using mushrooms to stop wildfires.
It took 2 years to do what would take nature 20 to 50 years. So it's over a 10-time acceleration.
Today is Wednesday, January 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Ecuador's fight to free itself of cocaine trafficking gangs boiled over with a burst of violence across the country this week. Explosions have been reported across Ecuador. 5 police officers have been kidnapped. More prisons saw riots. And on Tuesday, a group of armed people took over a live television broadcast as the nation watched. Joining us now to talk about this is VOA's Celia Mendoza. Give us a big picture. What's happening in Ecuador?
Ecuador has history with gangs and cartels. They're between Bolivia and Colombia and has become a location where cartels have established themselves. And over the years, it has increased the level of violence as well as criminality, just general criminality. Over the past year, we saw the implementation of the state of emergency. The most violent city has been Guayaquil, where some of the gangs have established themselves. The new president, President Noboa, was elected under extreme violence circumstances after the killing of one of the leading candidates. Actually, the people that were caught and accused, or allegedly, at that point, were mostly Colombian nationals. And that shows how tight the Ecuadorians and Colombians are. And this is part of that root of the cartels and narcotics. President Noboa now is trying to get a hold of the situation. Over the past 24 hours, establish in a state of emergency, 60 days to try to get a hold of what is happening with the violence and the gangs. And he took it a step farther, declaring 22 of the gangs terrorist organizations after one of the leading gang members from Los Chones escaped prison. And that also generated what we saw, which is the taking armed men with face masks coming inside one of the local television stations in Guayaquil. Everything was caught on camera. Members of the media were surprised. It's the first time that something like that happened.
What's interesting is you could see people standing on the street throughout the country watching, you know, looking in store windows at television sets, watching all of this happen. And it's not just the only violence that's happened in the last 24 hours. 5 police officers have been kidnapped. There were reported explosions all over the country. They haven't said why things are exploding, but you have to assume that it's all part of the same push, I guess, by the gangs, pushback on the government.
Exactly. That's some of the stuff that was said on this live transmission is no police. Some of the members of the media were seen making gestures to the camera to try to let them know that don't get the police here, because that's one of the worries of many of them. We have heard testimonies of police officers who are concerned about their safety because the gangs are not standing still. They want to push back on those measures. But it's also, and if we can make a parallel of what happened in Mexico during the administration of Presidente Calderón. He had no tolerance for the cartels, and it became a bloodbath with the cartels. And that was one of the darkest time for civilian population, because at the end of the day, gangs are interested in their business and they don't care about the civilian population. Therefore, those images that we saw is the first time in Ecuadorians we have spoken over the past few hours. They were extremely surprised. They know about the violence. They know about the situation and the crime. But this is a new level for them. And
Is there a fear across the country by the civilian population that this now, with all of this violence on the streets, could affect them?
Yes, absolutely.
VOA's Celia Mendoza. The news surrounding U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin's hospitalization went from bad to worse on Tuesday when it was revealed he'd been treated in December for prostate cancer, something the White House said it didn't know until Tuesday. To the Pentagon now and VOA's Carla Babb. Is this as shocking as it seems?
Well, the fact that it took so long to notify other members of the Pentagon, other members of Austin's team, the president himself was not even notified until late in the week last week about the hospitalization, and then did not learn about the prostate cancer until today. Those things are completely shocking to me, even as someone who has known Secretary Austin for years. I actually knew Secretary Austin when he was then General Austin and he was the head of U.S. Central Command back in 2014. He's always been a very private person. He's always tried to, frankly, avoid the media and avoid the spotlight. So the fact that he would try to quietly handle this is not surprising, but the fact that it went on so long, the fact that he had an emergency where he was rushed to the hospital in an ambulance, and no one in the senior levels knew why. That is absolutely shocking, and I have never heard of anything like this before in the nearly decade that I've spent at the Pentagon.
Well, to try to frame it for people why this is important, maybe you can give us an overview of really what amounts to a leaderless Department of Defense.
Sure. So here is my best explanation that I can give viewers who aren't in the Pentagon day in, day out, day in and day out, like my colleagues and I are. So the fact that that Secretary Austin can have a procedure or give the authority of Secretary of Defense to someone else, to his deputy specifically, that's not unique. There was an example given to me recently when Secretary Austin was traveling aboard a Navy helicopter or a Navy aircraft to go to the Gerald R. Ford aircraft carrier. That naval aircraft did not have the appropriate comms so he could be in touch with the people he needed to be in touch with instantaneously. And so he transferred authority to Deputy Secretary Kathleen Hicks while he was going to the Gerald R. Ford aircraft carrier out in the Mediterranean. That's one example of how this happened. So it's not unusual that Deputy Secretary Hicks would get that phone call saying, okay, you need to have the authorities of the Secretary of Defense at this moment. What is unusual is that there was a medical procedure involved and no one knew exactly where Austin was except for a few close members of his staff. And what the Pentagon is saying is that because his chief of staff had the flu, that was what ultimately caused the delay in notifications. That while authorities were transferred within hours of when Secretary Austin was sent to the hospital, the fact that Deputy Secretary Hicks didn't know that he was in the hospital, just thought it was some routine transfer, that realization did not come to fruition for several days. And that is what is so surprising. And that is what is so unique. And the situation has continued. He is still in the hospital. He's not in the intensive care unit anymore, but he is now, he is still recovering. And the Pentagon just said today that this could be a recovery that takes time. So all of these things put together create a very unique experience that the Pentagon is trying to deal with, and that, frankly, the White House is trying to deal with. The White House has said that Secretary Austin has the full confidence of the president. However, the president didn't even know that he had prostate cancer until today. So a lot of contradicting statements being made, which really just shows how much Secretary Austin failed to disclose to his fellow officials.
The pressure is enormous on the administration in an election year. It makes them look like they're not in control of the executive branch. A senior cabinet member like this, does the Pentagon sort of acknowledge this is a problem for them?
Yes, they have acknowledged that this is a problem. They have acknowledged that they need to do better. That's exactly what Pentagon Press Secretary Major General Pat Ryder told me in today's briefing. He said that we have to do better in terms of not only the timeliness, but the transparency, especially when it comes to the secretary's health. And he committed to me today and to other reporters at the briefing that the Pentagon would make sure that this doesn't happen again, and that they do a better job next time.
VOA's Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Former President Donald Trump appeared in federal court in Washington on Tuesday, this time to claim he cannot be tried for plotting to overturn the results of the 2020 election he lost to Joe Biden because presidents have immunity. The federal appeals court of three judges appeared to be deeply skeptical of his argument and questioned whether they even had jurisdiction to consider the appeal of a lower court that ruled no such immunity existed. During the lengthy arguments, the three judges repeatedly pressed Trump's lawyer to defend claims that Trump was shielded from criminal charges. Following these other stories from around the world, a private U.S. lunar lander mission is doomed to fail, and NASA pushes back plans to return astronauts to the moon. These twin developments Tuesday represents blows to America's ambitions to stimulate a commercial space economy, develop a permanent base on the moon, and use it as a jumping-off point for Mars. China, meanwhile, is looming in the rearview mirror, targeting 2030 for a crewed landing on the moon. Gasoline prices are going to skyrocket in Cuba, with a single 40-liter tank of fuel rising to 6,240 pesos, or about $23 at black market exchange rates. That's five times more than it costs now, and well over the monthly average state salary, 4,209 pesos, or about $15.60. The communist-run government says it's necessary to control deficit spending, raise funds to import food, medicine, and, critically, more fuel. A Kenyan court on Tuesday gave authorities 14 days to prosecute suspected cult leader Paul McKenzie or face having to release him. He was detained after piles of human remains were discovered last April. The former taxi driver is accused of inducing hundreds of his evangelical Good News International Church followers to starve themselves to death in order to meet Jesus, according to a government report. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said on Tuesday he told Israel they have to do a better job of protecting innocent lives in Gaza.
We know that facing an enemy that embeds itself among civilians, who hides in and fires from schools, from hospitals, makes this incredibly challenging. But the daily toll on civilians in Gaza particularly on children, is far too high.
Blinken also said that South Africa's genocide charge against Israel is meritless, and that he talked with Israeli officials about the future of Israel and the Palestinian territories.
We continue to discuss how to build a more durable peace and security for Israel within the region. As I told the Prime Minister, every partner that I met on this trip said that they're ready to support a lasting solution that ends the long-running cycle of violence and ensures Israel's security. But they underscored that this can only come through a regional approach that includes a pathway to a Palestinian state.
South Korea's spy agency has confirmed that Hamas has been using North Korean-made weapons in the Iranian proxy's war with Israel. The South Korean spy agency was responding to a VOA Korean service story published last week showing new photos of North Korean F-7 rocket-propelled grenades with Korean lettering recently used by Hamas. VOA Korean obtained the photos through a diplomatic source. Nitsana Darshan Leitner is a human rights lawyer considering suing North Korea and Iran in the U.S. court system.
For Iran to get the missiles from North Korea, it's not a problem. Then Iran ships or flies the weapons, the missiles, to Damascus. In Damascus, Hezbollah just comes to the airport, picks them up in trucks, and takes them to Lebanon. This is how they wind up in the hands of Hezbollah. When you talk about Hamas, Iran just sends the money to Sudan. And in Sudan, Hamas rents trucks and bring them with trucks to the border with Egypt over Sinai. And over there near Rafah crossing, you know, it's the point that connects between Egypt to the Gaza Strip. Hamas does not bring it as a merchandise. It just smuggles it in tunnels underneath the Rafah crossing.
You can hear the full interview for this story on VOA's program, Flashpoint Iran. You can find that on our website, voanews.com. Hamas is a U.S.-designated terrorist group. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. As we near this weekend's presidential election in Taiwan, a look now at China's attempts in recent years to apply highly targeted economic pressure in an attempt to sway Taiwan's politics. VOA's Bill Gallo spoke with fruit farmers whose livelihoods depend on trade with China.
It's been a rough few years for Zhou Yinqing. His main crop is adamoya, a sweet tropical fruit. Adamoya are perfect for growing in the warm island climate of southern Taiwan. They're also perfect for consumers in China, who typically purchase nearly 90% of these adamoyas. But China cut off adamoya imports 2 years ago, during a period of political tensions with Taiwan. So says they will usually find some excuse to say there is something wrong with your products. For 2 years, Zhou didn't make a profit. China lifted the restrictions in June, but the market still hasn't fully recovered. Amid tensions, China has also banned other Taiwanese fruits, in each case citing biosafety precautions. The instability has taken a toll on parts of Taiwan's fruit industry. China often denies political motivations for its economic measures against Taiwan. At other times, Beijing is more explicit, linking the moves to the actions of what it calls Taiwanese independence forces. It's part of a bigger pattern by China, which has long used carrots and sticks to influence Taiwan, says analyst Chao Chun. Chun says, I open the door to the market and give you some perks. And then, when you've developed a dependency, I can do whatever I want with you. For many in this agricultural region, the uncertainty is concerning, especially ahead of this week's election. Depending on the result, ties with China could worsen, making it harder to export there. Many fruit farmers support politicians who want to do more business with China. Tough choices for those caught in the middle of cross-strait tensions. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Taitung, Taiwan.
And finally, last year we saw unprecedented wildfires around the world, in Europe, in Canada, in the United States, and in many other regions. They dealt with an increase in wildfire activity blamed in large part on climate change. Now, a group in the U.S. state of Colorado has one potential solution to help fight wildfires. Mushrooms. Here's Shelley Schlender.
Wildfires around the world are growing more destructive. In the western U.S. state of Colorado, brush that is cleared to thin forest can still burn, and hauling it out is expensive. So foresters outside the city of Boulder are testing a more natural way to make deadwood quickly disappear. It's a fungi way.
So some of these wood chips that you see behind us, we've actually donated for the inoculation projects for mushrooms to help with fire mitigation.
At the Mycology Center Boulder Mushroom, founder Zach Hedstrom tends dozens of small petri dishes that hold local wild mushroom fungi.
We culture these strains out of our environment and bring them into our lab and isolate them, and then we study the ways that they can be used.
Hedstrom's team adds tiny doses to hundreds of bags of growing mix. Within days, the bags fill with fungal roots, mycelium, ready for wildfire mitigation. Piles of wood chips like these in Evergreen, Colorado, can increase wildfire risk for decades. Forester Jeff Ravage walks to a mound that used to be another giant wood chip pile. He sped up its decomposition with wild, local fungi.
It took 2 years to do what would take nature 20 to 50 years, so it's over a 10-time acceleration of natural forces.
To avoid invasive species, Ravage says it's crucial to use local wild fungi. Done correctly, the payoff is something unlikely to burn and so beneficial that Ravage scoops up a handful of decomposed chips and breathes them in.
It's not rancid. It's not woody. Smells like beautiful soil.
Mushroom mitigation pioneers are hoping to expand their efforts to help people anywhere where threatened by wildfires. Shelley Schlender, VOA News, Boulder, Colorado.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has approximately 900 troops in Syria and 2,500 in Iraq as part of the coalition whose goal is the enduring defeat of ISIS. In recent months, those U.S. forces have been attacked by Iranian proxies using drones and rockets that have resulted in injuries to dozens of U.S. personnel. The United States has repeatedly said it would respond to the attacks at its own time and choosing. Until January 4, 2024, the U.S. responded by targeting facilities like training areas and weapons storage sites used by Iranian proxy groups that resulted in a small number of enemy casualties. On January 4th, however, the United States employed a different tactic in defense of its troops, as Pentagon spokesperson Brigadier General Patrick Ryder told reporters.
On January 4th, at approximately 12 p.m. Iraq time, U.S. forces took necessary and proportionate action against Mushtaq Jawad Kazim al-Jawari, a.k.a. Abu Taqwa, who is a Harakat al-Najuba leader. Abu Taqwa was actively involved in planning and carrying out attacks against American personnel. The strike also killed another Han member. It is important to note that the strike was taken in self-defense, that no civilians were harmed, and that no infrastructure or facilities were struck.
General Ryder noted that U.S. forces are currently in Iraq at the invitation of the Iraqi government to help train and advise in support of the Defeat ISIS mission, and that the United States will continue to consult closely with Baghdad about the safety and security of U.S. troops. He emphasized the danger posed by ISIS, both in the present, given its claim of responsibility for the recent terrorist attack in Iran, and in the past.
And you'll recall it was 10 years ago this coming summer that ISIS was approximately 24 kilometers outside of Baghdad when we kicked off the counter-ISIS mission after they had subsumed large swaths of Syria and Iraq.
No one wants to see a return of ISIS, said General Ryder. So our focus is going to remain on the defeat ISIS mission. But again, we're not going to hesitate to protect our forces if they're threatened. The United States, he declared, does not seek any broader conflict with Iran. We don't see conflict with these groups, but we're not going to stand aside and allow our forces to be threatened without ensuring that we're properly protecting them.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.